Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A terrific Tuesday to you. So happy that you're with me on this Tuesday on the Cale Clark Show. And we're bringing back a Tuesday tradition that we haven't done in quite some time. We're going to play a little Bible trivia on this Tuesday. Tuesday trivia. And you can get in on the action right now. You don't even know what the questions are yet, but if you want to call in and save your spot, 888-914-9149. You can also call in with your question or comment, 888-914-9149. You can also email the show, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com, and follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E on Twitter, and the show account on Twitter is at Cale Clark Show. So we're going to talk about some other cool stuff as well in just a moment. I'm going to introduce you to this incredible nun, this engineer nun, who just might give Elon Musk a run for his money. Well, we'll see about that. And later on, I'll tell you about how a friend of mine cornered me just last night about a really tricky question on morality. And it's one that probably you've gotten as well over the last few weeks. I'm going to show you how you can answer that. So before we get going with all that, though, I do want to give out the Bible trivia questions for today. Jim, I should have prompted you to get some Jeopardy music or something like that.
Yeah,
my fellow Canadian, Alex Trebek. But anyways, we'll do the best we can. We'll do the best we can. We can maybe come up with some stuff later. But I'm going to give out five questions, okay? So just remember which number you're trying to answer when you call in, okay? So Bible Trivia Tuesday, here we go. Question number one. And no cheating, okay? No cheating. You're not allowed to, you know, play it straight. Don't Google it. You could do that. There's no way I could check you, but play it straight. No Googling. See if you know this off by heart. And the second thing I should tell you as well, just a little caveat, we have no prizes to give out because, as you know, Relevant Radio is a 501c charity. We can't. If I were to give out prizes, I would probably be arrested. The FBI would probably raid my office, which actually probably would be a good thing in a sense, because they would at least get rid of all the papers. They you know, like the Mar-a-Lago, right? They just take it all out. My wife would be super, super happy about that. So they can figure out what's in all those boxes, because I'll probably never open them. But anyway, so here's question number one. Question number one for bragging rights here is this. What was the name of the tree that Adam and Eve were told not to eat fruit from in the book of Genesis? Now, that's kind of a softball question we're tossing out to you. So that's question number one in Bible trivia. So if you want to answer that, once again, the phone number, 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Question number two. A little bit more tricky. What was the name of the first woman judge in Israel? What was the name of the first woman judge in Israel? That's question number two. Okay, question number three for today. Can I step up the degree of difficulty a little? We should like have a points total or something, Jim, for these questions. And the more difficult they get, the more points you get. Anyways, here we go. Question number three. David, the shepherd, was how old when he became king of Israel? How old was David when he became king of Israel? That's question number three. We talked about David yesterday, how Jesus is a new son of David, right? Just like Solomon was the son of David, Jesus is a new and greater Solomon. And Solomon had a lot of wives, 700 wives. That could have been a trivia question as well. And over 300 concubines, but he had only one queen. That was his mother, the queen mother, Bathsheba. And so Mary is our queen mother. We celebrated the queenship of Mary yesterday. So if you missed that discussion that we had about it, how you can defend that through the Bible, check out the podcast for this show. You can find it on yesterday's episode. All right, so that was question number three. David the shepherd was how old when he became king of Israel? All right, so that's number three. Number four, question number four is this. Even more tricky. What is the name of the town that is called the City of Palm Trees in the Bible? The City of Palm Trees. A lot of cities that might have palm trees in the Near East. But anyway, so that's question number four. And then the last one, question number five, is simply this, but it might not be so simple. What is the name of the boy who was sent out into the desert to die with his mother? Ooh, sounds rather ominous. What's the name of the boy who was sent out into the desert to die with his mother? Okay, so those are the five trivia questions. So we're going to get the phones ringing, and we will, we'll basically see what you know and what you don't know. So as you're calling in right now with those trivia questions, 888-914-9149. Got to tell you this really cool story. I've been wanting to talk about this for days, but we've had so much great stuff to talk about on the show that I haven't been able to squeeze in. But I said, I'm doing this now. I'm talking about this. So Reuters, you know, the Reuters news agency, they had this great story about a nun in the Democratic Republic of Congo who's basically this engineer, and she built her own power plant. This is crazy. This nun built a hydroelectric power plant, and she's giving free power to a town in Africa. Now, why did she do this? I think this is basically a situation where if you want something done right, you do it yourself. If you want something done right, do it yourself. And because where she lives in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and by the way, her name is Sister Alphonsine Siza. Sister Alphonsine. So Sister Alphonsine got really, really tired of what was going on, because in the Democratic Republic of Congo, there are all these blackouts. There are these rolling blackouts all the time that happen there. Most of the power that the Democratic Republic of Congo gets comes from this really run-down, badly managed hydroelectric power system. So there's blackouts happening all the time. And so she just got annoyed. Sister Alphonsine just got annoyed, and she said, you know what? I am sick and tired of having to read by candlelight at night. And they had all these generators that were powered by fuel, right? I mean, you can imagine with the price of fuel, how difficult that they were to get going. And so these fuel-powered generators, she would use those. But now she has built her own hydroelectric plant that's providing free energy to a medical clinic, two schools, her convent where she lives, and the local parish church. And it's really amazing. And so maybe after the show, I'll post a little picture of her on Twitter. We'll provide a link to the article as well. It's really interesting. So most of the time, she spends her day wearing like these rubber boots, because, you know, you don't want to electrocute yourself standing in the water, right? I don't know how it works. But anyways, it's hydroelectric power, right? It comes from the water. And she's got her white veil, and she's wearing a construction hat on top. It's really cool. And so she's working around the clock. She's got a team of nuns and some engineers that are helping her, and they're greasing up the machinery. They check the generator, you know, turning the dials. And so the power comes from this nearby reservoir of water. And without this plant, if she hadn't got this going, all the people that live there, they would only have electricity for 2 or 3 days every week, for only a few hours each day, because of all these blackouts that are happening in the Congo. So she's really done an incredible service for the community. But part of it was just so she could get her work done. And she said, quote, "We sisters cannot function this way because we have to provide a lot of services to the people," end of quote. By the way, Sister Alphonsine is 55 years old. And so the town, there's about 300,000 people who live in this town. So it's not a small town. It's a fairly mid-sized town, to be sure. And it's right along the border of the Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda. Now, there's been a lot of corruption in that part of the world. And a lot of critics say that the government's been working with all these foreign agencies trying to get the power grid up and running. And the Congo has a lot of, it's really rich in minerals. So a lot of people want the minerals that they have there. But a lot of critics of the government, they say, well, all they really care about is they want to get power plants up and running, but it's only so that they can sell their electricity to other countries. They're not really helping their own people. So Sister Alphonsine said, enough of this. And it's just incredible how she did this. Now, only 20% of the population in the Congo has actually access to electricity, according to the World Bank. So what she started doing, Sister Alphonsine started raising money back in 2015 to build her own power plant. And she kind of came by this by, when she was a young nun, she started repairing electrical problems in her convent. And she showed this real promise for engineering. So her superiors actually said, you know what, we're going to actually send you away for studies. And so she was sent to study mechanical engineering. And she became really good. She became an actual engineer, graduated. And she raised, with her convent, her other sisters, $297,000, almost $300,000, to build this little power plant. And it generates between 0.05 and 0.1 megawatts. So for all you engineers out there, there you go. So this is incredible. The local school, the secondary school there, the high school there, students can now actually learn computer skills by actually working on computers. They have electricity to power the computers. Before, they were just simply trying to read about this stuff in books. And so this is amazing. And they have their own turbine. They've got their own power. And they can do a lot more stuff. So, hey, hats off to you. Construction hat off to you. Sister Alphonsine Siza, really, really good job. There's a really cool story that Reuters News point out about the nun who built her own hydroelectric power plant. All right, so we've got some trivia potential answers to these questions on the phone right now. Let's go to Tom in California, who is on line three. Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Hey, pretty good, Cal.
Which question did you want to answer?
I'll give a shot to all of them. I could be wrong, but that's fine.
Let's just pick one, okay? So we can give other people a chance. So which one did you want to answer?
Okay, so the City of Palms, I believe, would be Jericho.
You are correct. That is a really, really good job. The City of Palms, the City of Palm Trees in the Bible is Jericho, and it says that in Deuteronomy chapter 34, verse 3. Well done, Tom. Can we have a round of applause, Jim? That was excellent. And thank you so much for that Jeopardy music as well. This is making me feel very Alex Trebek-ish. Appreciate that, Tom. Tom calling from California. He is correct. He has gotten the answer to question number four. So we got four questions left because there were five overall. Let's go to Vince, who's in Maryland. Hey, Vince.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well.
Good. I'll pick question one.
Question number one. Okay, so question number one, just for the listeners out there who might have missed it. What was the name of the tree that Adam and Eve were told not to eat fruit from? Go ahead.
I believe it was the tree of life.
That is incorrect. That is incorrect.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Close. Good guess, Vince. And this is why it's a bit of a tricky question. So if you know the answer to that question, question number one is still on the board. What was the name of the tree that Adam and Eve were told not to eat fruit from? If you know the answer to this question or the other questions, call in right now. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. We'll get you on the air right away. Let's go now to Laura, who's in Wisconsin. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Laura. I would like to choose number one, please.
Okay, well, all right, let's get this out of the way. So question number one, what was the name of the tree Adam and Eve were told not to eat fruit from? What do you think, Laura?
Knowledge of good and evil.
You got it. She is correct. Laura, you aced that one. That's right, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So they were allowed to eat from the tree of life as much as they wanted until the garden got closed off to them, flaming sword, you know, like a lightsaber, they got kicked out. So no more tree of life. It's part of why death came into the world. I think we were chatting about this the other day on the Faith Explained show. So great job, Laura. Laura in Wisconsin, she gets bragging rights in front of all her friends, and she can call them and say, hey, I was just on Relevant Radio on the Cale Clark show, and I got it right. So question number one is off the board. Question number four is off the board. So just let me tell you what the other ones that are left that you can still answer are. Question number two, what was the name of the first woman judge in Israel? That is still up for grabs if you want to call in. 888-914-9149. And then we got question number, let me find it here. Question number three, David, the great shepherd. How old was he when he became the king of Israel? Let me know. Call in 888-914-9149. Number four is off the board, but we still have question number five. What was the name of the boy? It's very sad. What was the name of the boy who was sent out into the desert to die with his mother? So if you know, let me know. 888-914-9149. All right, lots of people flooding the phone lines here. Okay, what do we need here? Pick. Jim, you can pick for me, okay? Okay, oh, here we go. Tracy from Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Hi, Tracy. How you doing?
Hello, how are you?
I'm great. You got an answer for me for one of the questions?
I think number five is Ishmael.
You are correct. What was the name of the boy who was sent out into the desert to die with his mother? And that was Ishmael. It's a daily double.
How about his mom? Wasn't that Hagar?
Yeah, it was Hagar. And so you can read about this and how God took care of them, even though they were sent away. Sarah was not really happy about this other kid and Hagar and everything. So that's in Genesis chapter 16. You can also read about it in Genesis 21:14. It's mentioned as well. So really good job. Excellent job, Tracy. So number five is off the board. Number four is off the board. What do we have left? We got number one off the board. So we've got question number two. What was the name of the first woman judge? That's still there. Question number three is still up for grabs. And that is, David the shepherd was how old when he became the king of Israel? So really, those are the only two that are left. Let's see what we got here. Paul is on the line from Maui in Hawaii. Paul, it's good to have you on the show. Which one would you like to answer?
Well, thank you. How old is David? He was 30 when he started to be king.
You are correct. That was question number three. David the shepherd boy was no longer a boy. He was 30 years old when he became the king of Israel. And you can read about that in 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 4. So well done. Well done, Paul. And as your prize, you get to take me. You get to make sure I get an all-expenses-paid trip to Hawaii, because I've always wanted to go to your home state. No, I'm only kidding. There are no bribes here on the Cale Clark Show. We can't do that. We got to play this straight. But congratulations, you get bragging rights all over the great state of Hawaii. Thank you, Paul, calling from Maui. We always say, and Father Rocky says this on the Family Rosary Across America, it's from Maui to Maine, right? So we cover the basis. We cover all the states. We cover the world through the internet and through the relevant radio app, where a lot of people are listening as well. So we got one question left, and that is question number two. What was the name of the first woman judge in Israel? Let's go to Bill in Minneapolis. Hey, Bill. Oh, Bill is gone. Maybe he wanted to answer one of the other questions. He had to check out. So, all right. This is a biblical name. We got to go to this guy. Simeon. Simeon is calling from California. Hey, Simeon, do you know the answer to this one?
Yes, I think. I want to say it's Deborah.
You are correct. Great job, Simeon. By the way, Simon, Simeon, Simon Peter, same name. Same name is one of the most popular boys' names in Jesus' time. And Simeon, let me tell you, you become very rocky. You become like Peter the Rock, because that's a solid answer right there. And you are correct. It was Deborah, the first woman judge in Israel. You can read about that in the book of Judges, chapter 4, verse 4. Well, that's it. We absolutely have all the questions answered now. Amazing job by all of you guys. Now, we do have I got to take one more call here before we go to break, because even though we've answered the questions, I want to see, this guy probably doesn't know. Daniel, who's 12 years old, is calling from Minneapolis as well. Hey, Daniel.
Hi.
Hey, did you have an answer for one of the questions? We'll let you, even though they've already been answered, we'll see if you got it. Which one were you looking for?
Number two.
Number two. Okay, what was your answer?
Deborah.
You got it, Deborah, the one we just did. So, Daniel, congratulations. That was correct. You can tell all your friends that you, in fact, are a prophet, because the prophet Daniel, right? And he was a young guy, too, who honored God And hopefully you can do that in your own life as well. Well, Patrick Alog, who's answering the phones right now, is screaming for me to take a break right now because he just had to answer about 20 phone calls in 2 minutes. So you're earning your keep tonight, Patrick. We'll give you a break. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show. And I will tell you about a moral dilemma that was thrown at me last night by a non-Catholic. How did I answer it? I'll explain. 888-914-9149. Be right back on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. All right, welcome back to the show. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Hey, I had to get back in the groove. We hadn't done a Tuesday trivia session in a long time. And producer Jim did a great job, and Patrick Alog working the phones. He's got a lot of stuff on his plate right now. He's following the Little League World Series very closely. I don't know who's winning. I don't know what's going on over there, but that's a nice little tradition that they have too now, to play a Major League Baseball game in conjunction with the Little League World Series in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Really cool. It's very much like the Field of Dreams game. It's kind of a unique thing that baseball does. Really, really awesome. Good stuff. Well, listen, that was a home run. I can say that trivia contest. So thanks to everybody who called in. And if you want to call in right now, if you got a question, you got a comment, something else you want to talk about, 888-914-9149 is the studio line where you can call in for free to talk to me on the Cale Clark Show. You can also, of course, follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E Clark with an E, and email the show, if that's your bag, cale@relevantradio.com. Well, I've told you before about my friend Greg. He's a totally awesome guy, evangelical guy, really good dude, really has a heart for God, wants to follow after God. And a lot of times he'll kind of try to nail me to the wall because I may be the only Catholic that he knows. And this is a good thing for all of us to remember, not to put any pressure on you, but you know, they always say, you may be the only gospel people ever see or ever read, because they want to actually read the gospel, and they're going to read your life. And St. Paul talks about this in one of his letters. He says, you guys are like living letters, living epistles. You are the letter, from God, to others, and they're reading the gospel in your life. So, gulp. So we've got to provide not only a good example, but also answers to people's questions, and people do have them. You don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to know all the answers. It's good to know where to look. Relevant Radio can help you with that, of course. And anyway, so in the fallout of everything that happened recently with the Supreme Court decision overturning Roe versus Wade, throwing the abortion question back to the states, and maybe you guys have seen memes that have popped up on the internet. And so my friend Greg sent me a meme basically saying, what would the Catholic Church say about this? It's kind of a moral theology question, and that's not really my area of expertise. I think moral theology is really fascinating. And it was a sort of a meme that he sent me that he found on Instagram. It was an actual news story about how there was a teen where did she live? In the Dominican Republic. And apparently the Dominican Republic is one of those countries that does have a total ban on abortion. And there's a picture of this woman named Rosa Hernandez, and she was holding a portrait of her deceased daughter, who was a 16-year-old, and she was pregnant. She also had cancer. And the doctors delayed the teen's chemo because it could have harmed her fetus. And at the end of the day, tragically, both of them died, the mother and the unborn baby, from cancer. So my friend Greg was like, hey, what would the Roman Catholic position be on this question? And it's a good question. So And I said, you know, to the best of my knowledge, this falls under the case of double effect. Double effect. Now, in case you've never heard of double effect, this is an important moral question that often comes up. And I sent him an article about abortion and double effect, because these questions come up for Catholics a lot, especially in light of the overturning of Roe. And this article is called Abortion and Double Effect, which was written by Matthew Newsom. Yeah, it's published on Catholic.com. And so I thought he laid this out in this article really, really well. It was a really well done piece by Matthew Newsom. And he talked about how legislation that gets put in, and we're seeing this happen now at the state level to restrict abortion, sometimes the courts try to shut down these potential laws because they don't have an exemption clause for, quote unquote, protecting the life or health of the mother, end of quote. And this is where there's a bit of an issue, and Newsom points this out. Well, what do you mean when you say the health of the mother? The life of the mother, yeah, we can get that. It's pretty clear. But what about the health of the mother? Because sometimes when people say, well, I want to have an abortion for health reasons, well, that health is not physical health. Certainly not grave physical health from time to time, but it could be a mental health issue. I don't feel like I'm mentally healthy enough to have this child. I don't feel like I'm economically healthy enough to have this child or socially healthy. So that's an important thing to say, and he does say that. But he also quoted the very famous former U.S. Surgeon General C. Everett Koop. Now, I remember hearing about this guy a lot when I was a kid. I was watching television. There were always like anti-smoking ads, you know, C. Everett Koop says, don't do it. You know, so C. Everett Koop, he also talked about cases in which a pregnancy could actually threaten the life of the mother. And according to C. Everett Koop, this is extremely rare. And I suspect many physicians, if maybe the majority, would even agree with him. And this is what C. Everett Koop said. And this was back in 1980, he said this. I'm going to quote him here. In my 36 years of pediatric surgery, I have never known of one instance where the child had to be aborted to save the mother's life. If toward the end of the pregnancy, complications arise that threaten the mother's health, her obstetrician will either A, induce labor, or B, perform a cesarean section. His intention is to save the life of both the mother and the baby. The baby's life is never willfully destroyed because the mother's life is in danger. End of quote. So C. Everett Koop, a former Surgeon General of the United States, said that it's extremely rare, because if there's ever a case towards the end of the pregnancy where this might happen, they just induce labor, have a premature birth and just, you know, incubate and all that sort of stuff, or use a cesarean section method. So a lot of doctors have never even encountered such a case where the life of the mother is at stake. But we do know that there are from time to time situations where this does happen. And so in the article, Matthew Newsom kind of gives this hypothetical case and says, what would you do if you were a doctor in this situation? So let's say you're a doctor, your patient is not pregnant, and she has uterine cancer of the uterus. The only way to treat her is to remove her uterus. So he says, look, when this happens, now she's not pregnant, but she has to have her uterus removed, it's cancerous. There's two effects that happen. One is something that you want. The other is something you don't want. The effect that you want to happen is you want to save her life. You want to excise the cancer. You want to make sure that she can get back to health. The undesired effect is, of course, if you remove the uterus, she's not going to be able to have children of her own for the rest of her life. So she'll be permanently sterile. Now, that is not the intent here. Now, you as the doctor, if you do this, you've committed no moral fault. And the reason why is because of this principle of what's called double effect. Now what is double effect? What does this mean? It means that sometimes you need to perform an action that is morally good taken by itself, but it might have an unintended effect that is bad. And that's not your fault. That's not your fault. That's an unintended effect. So the unintended effect in this case would be that the woman would be rendered sterile. the morally good thing that the guy is trying to do is save her life, the doctor. So how do you know whether you're dealing with double effect here and the morality of all these cases? Well, there's three basic points that you need to keep in mind, and he points this out in his article, does Matthew Newsom. Point number one, the question of intention. The question of intention. What are you trying to do here? You can never intend for the evil effect to happen. That can't be your intention. And you can look this up in the Catechism. In the Catechism of the Catholic Church, paragraph 1752, it talks about that. Your intention has to be only for the good. So in the case of that we just mentioned, you want to save this woman's life from cancer. That's the good effect. So the evil effect, the fact that unfortunately this will render her sterile, that is unintentional. That's not what you want. That's not your intention. It's regrettable, but that's part of the package here. The second thing that you need to keep in mind when it comes to double effect is what's called causality. Causality. St. Thomas Aquinas very famously said, and this is quoted in the Catechism of the Catholic Church as well, paragraph 1759, the end does not justify the means. You've probably heard that a lot growing up and throughout your life. The end does not justify the means. So Aquinas, the angelic doctor, he said that. So the point is, you can never commit an evil act so that good might come out of it. So that can't be your intention, to commit evil that good might result. That's never morally a good idea. And that's in paragraph 1756 of the Catechism. So that's number two. So the first question, intention. What's your intention? The second question, causality. You can't commit an evil so that good might occur. The third question you have to ask yourself is what Newsom calls comparable gravity. Gravity. You know, how grave is the situation here? Is the good that's being done proportional to the bad effect, the so-called evil consequence of the action? So if you're going to take this action, if it's going to be a justifiable action, it has to be, the good that you're going to get done here has to be proportional to the bad consequence of the action. So you have to weigh those two things against each other. And he gives another little quote from the Catechism from paragraph 1754, where it says, the Catechism says, circumstances of themselves cannot change the moral quality of acts themselves. They can make neither good nor right an action that is in itself evil, but they can and do contribute to increasing or diminishing the moral goodness or evil of human acts. So that might be a little much to digest over the radio, but it's something to think about. And you can look up that paragraph in the Catechism, maybe read it a little bit more slowly in paragraph 1754. So then he goes back. Okay, now that you've got these three principles in mind, the principle of intention, the principle of comparable gravity, comparing the good being done to the bad that's going to result, and then the second thing is causality. You can never use evil to make a good come about. And then the third thing is comparable gravity. So let's go back now to this hypothetical situation. Let's talk about the intention of the doctor. The woman who has, she's not pregnant, she's got cancer of the uterus. What do you do? Your intention as the doctor is to try to save the patient's life, trying to protect her health. Number two, are you doing an evil in order to try to get a good result? No, you're not. You're actually doing a good. You're removing the disease that's threatening this person's life. So the fact that she becomes sterile, that happens at the same time, but that does not cause it. The good of the surgery does not cause it directly. So the third thing, yes, the good of saving her life greatly outweighs the bad and unfortunate result that she will also not be able to have children of her own going forward. So when you add it all up, it is a morally good action. Okay, so that's fine if the woman's not pregnant, but what about if she is pregnant? And that's the case that my friend Greg sent me last night. He sent me this case that happened in the Dominican Republic where they have a total ban, it seems, on abortion. This case of this young woman, she was 16 years old, pregnant, had cancer. Doctors didn't want to give her the chemo because it might have harmed the unborn and developing child. And they delayed it, and they wound up both dying of cancer, the mother and the baby. So what do you do in the case of the woman actually being pregnant? All right, so let's go back to this hypothetical woman. Let's say that she has uterine cancer, but she's pregnant this time. She's pregnant. The cancer is really progressing. She needs to be treated quickly if she's going to survive. So now, as the doctor, you don't just have one patient, you've got two patients, the mother, the child. So what you're trying to do as best as possible, Newsom says, is you want to preserve the life and the health of each of them, if possible. So what do? If you don't remove the mother's cancer, she will die. And at this stage in the baby's development, the baby is entirely dependent upon the mother for his or her survival. So if the mother doesn't get treatment, if the mother doesn't get the medical care she needs and she dies, the baby will die too, automatically. You're going to lose both patients. But the only way to save the mother's life is to remove her uterus, which tragically, the unfortunate truth is that it's home to a developing human person who will die because of the operation. So this is a case where double effect comes into play. Now, if the doctor was able to find some sort of a solution where maybe she can survive long enough to carry the baby until it's viable, and that's what C. Everett Koop was talking about, later in pregnancy, there are solutions. You can, of course, do a cesarean section. You can induce labor when the baby's viable. But what about if it's early in the pregnancy? That's not possible at that point. So if the doctor thinks that the mother might survive long enough to carry the baby until the baby's viable, sort of delay the treatment, like what happened in the Dominican Republic there, then the mother could choose to risk her own life to save the life of her child. That would be her choice. She might decrease her own chances of surviving, but she might choose to postpone that treatment in the hopes that she could save her baby. And one of the saints of the church, Saint Gianna Beretta Mala, she did exactly that. She was a doctor, and she's one of the great pro-life saints because she chose to risk her own life because she did have a developing child inside of her, and she tried to delay her treatment, and in her case, she did die, but she willingly chose to give up her life so that her child could survive and be at that point of viability. And that's exactly what happened. And that child is still alive today and was present at her canonization. So that's certainly a possibility if that is on the table. The mother could choose. But what if the cancer has progressed so much that there's no way that the mother could wait? She needs to have surgery now if she's going to survive. Then you only have a couple of choices as the doctor. You either allow both patients to die or save one, lose the other. So in that case, the moral choice would be to save the mother, because if you don't, both people will die. So this is double effect. This is a very good example of double effect. Your intention is to do a good, save the mother's life by removing the cancerous uterus. Unfortunately, evil will result unintended. The baby will die as well, but that's not desired. That's not intended. It's just very tragic. Number two, the evil effect does not cause the good result. In other words, the mother does not live because the child dies. In that case, the disease is being removed. The diseased organ is being removed, but the intent is not to perform an abortion, but the baby does die shortly after, or maybe even during the operation, but that's not the purpose of the operation. And then point number three, the idea of weighing the grave matters, the two very grave matters against each other. Clearly, saving one person is better than allowing two people to die through inaction. It's a very, very difficult moral choice. But it's good to know that the church has thought through these things. Holy Mother Church has been around for a while, has a lot of wisdom, has a lot of experience. In moral theology, again, this is not my area of expertise, and I find it just a fascinating field, though, a fascinating field to study, moral theology. And I actually, these guys who are moral theologians in the church, they really earn their keep, because there are constantly new moral issues being raised because of technology, what we can do today. And just because we can do something doesn't mean that we ought to do something. So they're always having to apply classic moral principles and truths to a new set of problems that keep cropping up again and again and again. So I hope that was helpful in trying to explain this whole principle of double effect. Now, obviously, the direct murder of an innocent human person is always a grave evil. It's never allowed. And that's not what's going on in that case that I just gave you, this hypothetical case, which has been a real case in real life. When the mother's life is in danger, medical ethics can recognize the principle of double effect. And the Catholic Church has always known this as well. So I hope that this cleared things up. If you've ever had that question, if anybody's ever asked you that question, as I was last night, I had to do some research, and we all have to do that. We all have to study. We have to learn more about our faith. And it's always good for me, because when I have to look this stuff up, hopefully I get a little smarter, and you learn a lot yourself when you have to look up the answer, when you have to research for someone else. You learn it too, and it sticks. And it sticks. And hopefully I'll remember that next time, and hopefully you will too. So we're going to come back with one more segment here on the Cale Clark Show. If you have any questions, comments, you want to call in, we've got a couple open phone lines right now. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We'll be right back after this. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show for our last segment here on this Tuesday, 888-914-9149. Hey, we're keeping Patrick Alog, who's working the phones, really busy. We had a round of lightning trivia, Tuesday Bible trivia earlier in the show. A lot of people are calling in now based on what we were talking about during the last segment, this principle of double effect, which comes up in moral theology. Let's go to the phones right now. We're going to go to line two, Paul from Youngstown, Ohio. Very faithful listener. Great to have you on the program once again, Paul. What's on your mind?
Hi, Cale. This question is based on something I had heard on a repeat of the Patrick Madrid show.
Okay.
And the scenario is, it's World War II, Nazi Germany, and you're harboring a Jewish family in your home.
Right.
Do you turn them over to the Nazi hunters, who would kill them for sure, or do you lie and say, no, no one's here? Personally, I would lie, considering that only a venial sin, or maybe not sinful at all, because you're trying to spare someone's life. But how would you answer that?
Yeah, that's exactly what I would do too, Paul. If you know, you're living in World War II, the Gestapo knocks on the door, you're hiding a Jewish family in the attic, and they ask you, "Oh, are you hiding anyone?" I'd say, of course not. You know, yes, I would lie to them. If I were to say the truth to the Gestapo, suffering, death will result guaranteed. So the Catechism actually talks about this. There's a whole section in there on lying. And of course, it's under this heading, which is called Respect for the Truth. And you can read about that in paragraphs, because the Catechism is organized by paragraph number, paragraph 2488 to paragraph 2492. So this is just a little snippet, okay, from that section. And this is the section on lying. Quote, "The right to the communication of the truth is not unconditional." So in other words, not everybody has a right to the truth. It goes on to say this. "This requires us in concrete situations to judge whether or not it is appropriate to reveal the truth to someone who asks for it. Charity," or that's love, another way of saying love is charity, "charity and respect for the truth should dictate the response to every request for information or communication. The good and safety of others, respect for privacy, and the common good are sufficient reasons for being silent about what ought not to be known, or for making use of a discreet language. No one is bound to reveal the truth to someone who does not have the right to know it." End of quote. So you can read more about this in paragraph 2488 and paragraph 2489 of the Catechism. So a lot of people don't have the right to know the truth. And it's not appropriate to reveal the truth in all situations. This would obviously be one of those cases. And so it's not a sin. It's, in fact, a moral imperative to not tell the truth in this situation. And so, obviously, if there's a way that you can avoid lying to save their lives, then take it. But it's not always possible. It's not always possible. So, you know, God forbid we should ever be in a situation like that. But, and even just in this, this may be a, you know, from this a ridiculous example, but if your wife asks you, oh, you know, do I look fat in this dress or something? You know, you gotta be really careful, right? So someone might die and that someone might be you. So anyways, all kidding aside, sometimes it's not charitable. That's a silly example, but sometimes it's not charitable to say things, say certain things, even if they're true. So, and certainly to save somebody's life, I mean, the answer is pretty clear. So, but it's a good topic. And sometimes this comes up in moral theology and philosophy classes and things like that. So thanks for asking that question, Paul, in Youngstown, Ohio. All right, now let's go to Bruce in Arlington, Virginia. Hello, Bruce.
Dale, great show. Thank you. Speaking about the second effect of the unborn that would perish mm-hmm. if you saved the mother's life, you called that an evil effect, or was I misunderstanding you?
Yeah, when I said an evil effect, didn't mean to say that it's a bad effect. It's another way of saying a bad effect. Not in terms of like a you know.
Okay. Well. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's the horse of another color. How about this scenario? The young lady refuses to have you remove her uterus. She will die with her infant. In mm-hmm. other words, she will commit suicide, which is a sin. Does the doctor have a moral right to override that and go ahead and remove her uterus to save her life? In other words, she's telling the doctor, I want to commit suicide with my baby. I'm going to die. What would the doctor do in that case? See, the evil is really the cancer. Mm-hmm. That's really the evil. What would the I would think the doctor has a moral obligation to override her her emotional position at that point and save her life.
Yeah,
well, I don't know. That's a tough question for me.
Yeah. Thanks for asking that, Bruce. And some of these questions can get pretty tricky. I will say this: I'm not a doctor, nor do I play one on the radio, so I'm going to be really careful about my answer here. And I'll just preface this by saying, I could be wrong, so don't quote me on this. So now I have free rein to say whatever I want. No, I'm only kidding. But I mean, my limited knowledge of this situation, I would think that in most jurisdictions there has to be patient consent for something like that, a surgery like that. So the doctor couldn't, you know, I don't know, chloroform the lady and, you know, knock her out and then do the surgery. And then she wakes up. What happened? Well, I did the surgery. Oh, well, I never had consent here. So now in terms of now there have been cases clearly where a pregnant woman has said, I don't want the surgery to remove the cancer in the hopes that I can hang on long enough to get my baby to viability. And that was the case of St. Gianna Beretta Mala, to my understanding that's what she did. And she wasn't trying to, you know, die or anything like that. She had other children. She wanted to be there for them, clearly. But that wasn't her intent, but that is what happened. She unfortunately did die. They weren't able to save her, but her child did survive in the end. And so if you're a doctor who's in a situation where, you know, maybe it's early in the pregnancy, you know that if like in that hypothetical case we talked about, if the patient doesn't get that life-saving operation, both will die, both the mother and the baby will die, and that's a virtual certainty. You can try your best to try to use moral suasion to convince the mother that she's not committing a moral evil. In that case, double effect comes into play. But I don't think you can force her to have the surgery. That would be my understanding of the situation. So there you have it. And That's a really good question. These are the moral quandaries that come up, and a lot of people haven't even heard of this concept of double effect. And even if they're a Christian, some non-Catholic Christians, and I dare say even a lot of Catholic Christians have never heard of this concept before. So it's a good thing to know, because sometimes medicines, procedures are prescribed that have this unintended effect. Your effect is to try to eradicate the disease, whatever, but it might have an unintended effect as well. And the examples are probably too numerous to mention here, but I like those three criteria that were laid out in the article there, and we'll provide a link to it in the show notes. So again, those three characteristics, when double effect comes into play, three questions that you need to ask: the question of intention. You can never intend the ill effect. That's not your intention here. The second thing is causality. The end doesn't justify the means. You can't intentionally do evil hoping that good might come out of it. And then the third question is, you have to compare, comparable gravity. The good that will be done, is that proportional to the bad result that will happen? And so, yeah, there's so many things that can come up, so many situations. So I really want to thank today producer Jim Shaper for manning the board today. Unfortunately, we run out of time. So everyone who's on hold, try call back tomorrow on the Cale Clark Show. We'd love to speak to you. Sorry we couldn't get through. Only have an hour here. We got to bring things to a close. I want to thank Patrick Alog. Man, you earned it tonight, that's for sure, on the phones. Everybody who called in for Bible trivia, for our lightning round. Check out the podcast later if you missed the show, the Faith Explained program, any of our other great shows. You can get them wherever good podcasts are found. And maybe the easiest way to get them is on the Relevant Radio app, the Relevant Radio website. Stream them, share them with a friend. I want to thank everybody once again who were so generous during our pledge drive last week. And if you didn't get a chance to contribute and like to, you can certainly do so through the website. That's it. I'm out for the day. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.